Okay, today's daf is Mem Dalet. We're going to start Perek Hazahav today. A lot of money, commodities, currencies, interesting stuff. Although a bit complicated. What did you say?
Markets are crashing.
Exactly. Very relevant today. Okay. Without getting into current events and the elections. Okay. The end of Mem Gimel Amud Bet at the Mishnah. Okay, first we're going to finish up Hamafkid, and then we'll start. Hazav. Choshev l'shloch yaba pikadon. Somebody who just thinks to use, okay, he's watching someone's item, and he says, you know what, I'm going to use this item. But he doesn't actually use it. At least that seems to be the simple reading. Beit Shammai yomim chayav. Beit Shammai says, you're actually chayav just by thinking to use this item for your own purposes. You're already chayav. This seems like an awfully strange shita, right? Right. It sounds like mila with korbanot. Okay, yafeh. Which could mean, you know, you're supposed to treat other people's items as if, you know, they're not yours, basically. So by the mere fact of you thinking of using it, that's already l'shoch yad. There is an opinion that explains that what he really means is that if eventually you use it, now what's the issue with shlichut yav? What have we been learning? Once you're sholech yav b'pikadon, you're mitchayev ba'onsim. So let's say you think to use the item, and then you actually use it. So from what point do we assume you're more liable, basically, for even onus? And according to Beit Shammai, it's from the moment that you actually thought to use it. As if you followed up with it, we're going to start the clock ticking from your level of responsibility from the moment you thought to the shloch yad. That's one possible explanation. You're not chayav until you actually are shalach bo yad. Where does he prove this from? Shenemar, im lo shalach yado b'melech areihu, which sounds like, right, you have to actually do shlichu yad and not just think about it. Okay, next halacha. Hita tachavit. Now we're going to learn about shlichu yad. What do you have to do in order to be mitchayav in shlichu yad? You're basically considered like a gazlan. You use the item, right, and you use part of it or use all of it, right? One thing we learned about shlichu yad is even if you use only part of it, you're mitchayev and ones for the entire thing. But let's say, in order to be chayav and shlichu yad, you actually have to do a kinyan. What if you don't do a kinyan? Okay, you don't lift it, pull it, do some sort of kinyan. What did you do? Hita tachavi. You just tilted it. V'natal heimenu revi'it. And you took a revi'it from this barrel. Then you put it back. Okay, so you just tilted it. Now, tilting is not a kinyan. You took a revi'it, and then it breaks. Eino mashalem ele revi'it. At that point, if the whole thing breaks, you're only chayav to pay back the revi'it that you took from it. Okay, you're not, it's not considered shlichu yad. What happened? You took a revi'it, so you have to pay back the revi'it that you stole, basically. But you're not chayav in shlichu yad in the sense that you're obligated on the whole rest of the chavit, even in a case of onus. But what if you lifted it and then took out a revi'it? So there you have the hagbaha, vinishbira, and then later it breaks, mishalem dimei kula. Then you have to pay the whole thing. Okay? Because then that's a classic case of shlichu yad. So now we want to know what is the source of the Beit Shammai Beit Hillel machloket. Detana Rabbanan. Al kol dvar pesha. Beit Shammai Omrim, right, we want to really learn how now Beit Shammai's opinion. What does he say? Why are you chayav even if you think about it to use it? Al kol dvar pesha, he says. Beit Shammai Omrim, elamed shechayav ala machshava kemaaseh. When it says davar sounds like dibur, right? So dibur here, we're extending dibur to include even machshava. Generally, we talk about maaseh, then there's a lesser level of dibur. This is an even lesser level of just thinking about it, but we're going to say that that's equivalent to speaking, okay? So therefore, just saying, and even if you say in your head, I'm going to use it, that because it says, I'll call devar pesha in the pasuk, therefore we're going to include even machshava. Ubeid hillel omrim, eno chayav ad shishlach bo yad, shenemar, lo shalach yadov melech ereu. So amru lahem beit shamay lebeit hillel, v'alok far nemar, I'll call devar pesha, right? What are you going to do with that? If it says, I'll call devar pesha, I know you want to say that it says im lo shalach yado, meaning you have to do actual shlichu yad to be chayav. But what are you going to do with al kol dvar pesha? Amru lahem beit hillel lebeit shammai, b'halo kfar ne'emar im lo shalach yado b'melech ereyu. In other words, it might say al kol dvar pesha, but it also says you have to be shalach yad. So imke matamud lamar called Dvar Pesha. So what am I going to do with that? Sheyachol enli elahu. You might think, and it's called Dvar Pesha seems to clearly be including something, right? And any wrongdoing you do, any wrongdoing seems to be inclusive of something you would have thought doesn't belong. So Beit Shammai says it's machshava. Beit Hillel says, no, what does it come to include? Comes to include, you might have thought, en li'alahu, if the shomer himself is poshea, if he does shlichut yad. Aval avdo l'shlucho minayim. What if he tells his eveder shaliach to go be sholech yad b'pikadon? What do we normally say in that situation? Ain shaliach li. Well, let's start even before that. Generally, we say shlucho shel adam kimoto, right? A shaliach of a person functions exactly as the person. So you would say, if your shaliach does it, so it's as if you did it. However, we have this other klal which says shlichut only applies when it's not a dvar avera. But if you're telling him to do a dvar avera, well then he has his own mind and he decided to do the wrongdoing and therefore he should be responsible. So comes Beit Hillel and says, contrary to general halacha that we'd say ein shlech l'dvar avera, this is an exception. Minayin labdo l'shlecho, mar labdo l'shlecho minayin. How do we know the shomer is still going to be responsible? Talmud lamar al kol dvar pesha. So al kol dvar pesha comes to say that in this case, now you have to wonder what this means. Does this mean that we say the principle of ein shlech l'dvar avera just doesn't apply here? Or do we say that we still say ein shlech l'dvar avera, and really the shaliach is going to be chayav. However, if there's a situation, what do we generally say ein shlech l'dvar avera? The responsibility is 100% onto the shaliach. Okay? And you're not responsible at all. But what if we say, and we gave this as a terutz yesterday to something also, maybe what it means is, or maybe a few days ago, I don't remember the exact context right now, but maybe if we say that, let's say, you're watching someone's item. You give it to the shomer, to a shaliach. You don't tell him that it's someone else's item, like with the mother and the son, and right? Maybe you don't tell him. And therefore, when he uses it, he doesn't realize that he's not allowed to use it. And therefore, he can't be chayav. So in that case, what do? We shift the responsibility back to you. Meaning that we do still have this concept of ein shaliach l'dvar avera. However, in a case where for some reason the shaliach would be patur, the responsibility is going to go back to the shomer. Whereas in a general case of ein shaliach l'dvar avera, we say you're totally not responsible, only the shaliach is. That's one possible way of reading it. Another possible way of saying it is that really maybe in this case there's some unique issue about a person being a shomer for some item. And if you give it to, you tell your shomer or your eved to do something with this item, then that's already a breach of contract with the original person. And therefore, maybe by the mere act of you telling him, you're already sholeach yad. And that's what it comes. And that actually, by the way, ends up being a little more similar to Beit Shammai, because it's the same kind of concept that just by dibur alone, by you telling someone to do something, you're already, right, that's a ma'aseh in and of itself, telling someone else to use it. And that maybe that's the ma'aseh avera and not actually when the sholeach uses it. Okay, maybe you could look at it that way. Okay, he ta'at a chavit. So now he tilts this chavit. He doesn't have a kinyan on it, right? So he's not chayav in shlichu yad. Amarava lo shanu ela nishbira. Aval hechmitza mishalemet kula. This is only in the case where you break it. It breaks, right? And then we said, you're not chayav in onsim because it broke. Because you weren't shalach yad, because remember, you didn't actually do a kinyan. But what if hechmitza, then if it spoils, then mishalem et kula, my time, geri didei huda ahanule. What caused it to be machmitz? Remember, you tilted it and you poured out some wine. By opening it, that causes the wine to spoil, and therefore, you directly caused the damage, right? That's not even, right? You were basically shalech yad in the entire thing by doing that. One second, there was something else I wanted to add here. Right, so then the way we review this, right, this is what I wanted to add. The way we review this is not as all one entity, as your shalech yad and the entire thing, actually, I said it wrong. What really is happening is on the revi'it, you're a gazlan because you stole it, right? You took this, you became a gazlan because you took a revi'it and you drank it. And on the rest of it, you're actually... Oh, wait, one second. I think this is on the next case I wanted to say. Sorry, it's on the next case. Fine. So this case, we're going to basically say, right, you caused the damage to the whole thing. So basically, you're shaleach yad in the whole thing. Now we're going to see, Amar Shmuel, lo natal, natal mamash. When it says, right, what did it say in the Mishnah? The Mishnah said, higbiha bin natal hemen a revi'it. And you took a revi'it, you put it back, and then it breaks. So Shmuel comes in and says, when it says that you took a revi'it, lo natal natal mamash, it doesn't mean you actually have to take a revi'it. Ela kevan shehigbiha litol afal pisha lo natal. Once you lift it in order to take it, you're already chayav. Now they say, wait a minute, what is this? Lema kasavar Shmuel, shlichu yad ena tzricha chisaron? Could it be that Shmuel holds that shlichu yad doesn't need chisaron, meaning, right, what do we generally say? Shlichu yad is you use part of the item and you still have the rest of the item, and on the rest of the item you become chayav and onus. So this would be a classic case, right? You're magbia to take, you take a revi'it, that part you stole, you machsir the item, and then you become chayav on the rest. But if we say shlichu yad ena tzricha chisaron, then we say you don't even... Just by moving it for your own purposes, you're already chayav even without having used the revi'it. Is that what we're saying, Shmuel holds? And obviously the Gemara, for whatever reason, doesn't want to say that he holds shlichu yad and it's richa chisaron. They don't want to say that. So they say, no, we're going to give a different answer. That's not why he thinks you're chayav even if you didn't take. Amrei lo. Shane hacha denichale detahave hachavit kula basis laha revi'it. You want to take a revi'it, but what do you say? You say, if I don't want to drink the wine right now, I want to drink the wine in a little while. Now, what's going to happen? If you keep the chavit whole, right, your wine is going to stay better. Right? You ever have, I was thinking about tomato, jar of tomato sauce in the fridge. And when it gets low to the bottom, right, it gets ruined very quickly. Because when you don't have a whole thing, right, the food itself keeps it within the jar fresher. But when there's stuff at the, you know, there's empty space and there's air space and all that, it's not going to keep it as well, for as good for as long. And certainly wine, we know that air, when it comes in contact with air, it's not good. So therefore, in a wine case specifically, they're going to say that he already really took the revi'it. He says, I want to drink this revi'it, but what happens? I want to use the rest of the wine to keep my revi'it in good shape, in which case he's actually using the entire thing. However, it's not going to be exactly shlichu yad. What is it going to be? On the first revi'it, he's a gazlan, because he's basically stealing it. He's saying, I want to keep this for myself. The rest of the wine, what is he doing? He's a shoal shalom idad. He's basically borrowing the wine to keep his wine better. So then, and then there's a machloket, remember, shoal shalom idad, is he chayv and onus because he's a gazlan, or is a shoal shalom idad chayv and onus because he's a shoal? Either which way is going to be chayv and onus. Okay? And that's why he's mitchayv onus and not actually for shlichu yav reasons. Okay. Now we're going to have one final question. By Rav Ashi, higbia arnaki litol hemena dinar mahu. If you pick up a whole wallet in order to steal a dinar from, in other words, you're watching someone's wallet, then you pick it up to take one dinar out, are you chayav? Is this going to be the same as the wine? Why? Mau chamra hu delo mintar el agav chamra. When it comes to wine, we say you need the rest of the wine to protect the wine so it doesn't spoil. Aval zuza mintar, but zuzim, right? There, one dinar on its own is perfectly fine. It doesn't need the rest of them to watch over it. O Dilma, shani nitiruta da arnaki min nitiruta de dinar. Or do we say no? What happens when you have coins loose? They get lost. If you keep your coins in a wallet with a whole bunch of other coins, it's a good way of protecting them from getting lost. So maybe it's a similar, comparable thing to the wine. Okay? And then the answer, obviously, teku, we don't know the answer to this question. How do you view an arnaki? Is it like the wine or not? Hadron ala chamafkid. Now we're going to start Perek HaZahav. Okay, we have to, this is one of those cases where sometimes we have it where the parak starts out with or the mesechet starts out and you say, well, really the intro comes later. So the intro here is in the middle of the Mishnah. So I actually decided I'm going to read the middle of the Mishnah first before we read the end of the Mishnah. Okay, so now we basically, what you have here is commodities and currency. Okay, now. We're going to call it tiva, which is matbea, which is going to be the currencies, versus pera, which is like perot, which are the commodities, the things that you buy. Now, we've learned about kinyanim in the past. What happens when you do a kinyan? One person buys something from another person, and he does some sort of kinyan, meshicha, hagbaha, he lifts it, he pulls it, he passes it over, there's mesira, there's all sorts of kinyanim. But the kinyan is done with the item that he's purchasing, not with the money. When we go to a store and we buy something, we generally say, if you give the money, that's your kinyan. But in Gemara, Mishnah, law, that's not the case. Money, by me taking the money from you, let's say you're buying something from me, you pay me money, there's really no kinyan done yet. Okay, which means what? What's the relevance? That if I want to change my mind or you want to change your mind, you can just say, you can cancel the transaction. So, you know, nowadays it's the opposite, really. It's once you give the money, so the deal is done, you know, it's very hard to get your money back. But in those days, for whatever reason, okay, I'm going to suggest a few possible reasons, but money wasn't the thing that made the kinyan happen. Now, what are the reasons for this possibly? First of all, in general, it seems the people did more of a barter system in general rather than actually paying money for things. That's a possibility anyway. Money was a little, you know, we talked about coins getting rotting and things like that. Money has no inherent value. We talked about this when it comes to muktzah, if you remember. The highest level of muktzah is something that has no use at all. And the classic examples are rocks and money, because money has no inherent value. So if you give me money, it doesn't really have any value. And because it doesn't have any value, it's just representative of value, so no real transaction happened according to halacha. In order for a real transaction to happen, you have to basically acquire the item itself and not the money. And you can see that there'd be a difference when there wasn't minted coins and money. Right now, money is very useful because we have tons of it, right? We have tons of coins, tons of bills. But in those days, they didn't have minting. They didn't have, you know, as many coins. And because of that, possibly it was viewed differently. Okay. Did you want to add something, Ruth? No. Okay. So now the question is going to be, can you help me get to a very interesting issue, which is, at what point in the sale, if we're buying currencies, okay, let's say somebody buys gold with kesef, or buys kesef with gold, okay? Silver with gold, or gold with silver. Let's say the transaction between us is I'm trading you gold for silver. So the question is there a relative, right? This Mishnah is going to say that things are relative to, right? If you're buying fruits with money, so we understand, the money is the, right? Let's say you buy it with kesef. So kesef is clearly the money, the currency, and the peirot are clearly the peirot. What if you're buying kesef as zahav, nechoshet and kesef, in other words, and again, it's unclear who's buying what from who, right? It could be, you know, different people are, like you go into a store to change money. So it's true you're purchasing money from the money changer, but in a sense, he's also purchasing money from you, right? He's getting, it's like a barter kind of thing. So the question is, what relative to what is considered the matbea, and what's considered the peira? And the relevance is very relevant because if you give the matbea and the person acquires the matbea, that's not a kinyan. But if that item is not considered the matbea, but it's considered the peira, then the kinyan is a kinyan and there's no going back. You follow? That's going to be the issue here. Okay. So let's start reading. Hazahav, I made a chart to make it easier because it gets very confusing with the lingo. What's koneh and what's not? I gave you the intro. We'll read the Mishnah from the beginning instead of, like I said, we'll read it from the middle. But let's follow. And in the chart, I already said, this is the tiva, the matbea. I wrote each case. And the other one is the peyret. Okay? Because it's a little confusing, the lingo.
Is referring to silver?
What?
Kesef
is silver?
Always.
Yeah. Always? No, in this case, they're referring to silver, actually.
And the matbea would be money.
Well,
which could also be a silver.
Which could, the silver could be money.
It could be a bar. Could be.
But matbea is
like
a coin,
matbea
and
doesn't
kesef
silver.
Is silver. Like zahav can't be a coin. I mean, zahav can be a coin, except that zahav isn't used in common terminology.
But they are going to talk about it, that zahav maybe at some point was used as something that they bought with. That's going to be part of the debate here. Okay, we're going to see one version of the Mishnah, okay? Later we're going to see Rebbe, it's called Rebbe Kamaita. There was an earlier version of Rebbe before this Mishnah that actually said the opposite when it came to the Kesef and the Zahav, okay, which Professor Sperber has a whole book about coins and in the Talmud, and he has a few chapters where he dafka discusses this Mishnah, and I didn't read it, but where he claims that the whole reason, the difference between Rebbe, the first reading of Rebbe, and his later reading, which is going to be a big debate in the Gemara here, what's the difference? He says it has to do with the fact that in that time period, with the Roman, you know, the coins and everything switched at that point. And they used to use gold, and then they switched to silver, you know, whatever it might be, that it affected the value of everything changed, and that affected the halacha. It's one way of viewing it, that it was actually based on a reality change of the how commodities were used. Hazahav koneh tekesef, which means what? If you switch zahav and kesef, it's the zahav that's going to cause the kinyan to happen, which means that zahav is like the peirot. The assumption is you're buying gold, like the way we would imagine it, right? You buy bars of gold, let's say, by paying it with silver, okay? And a kesef eino koneh tezahav. But if you just gave the kesef in order to purchase this zahav, that would not be considered a kinyan. Hanechoshet koneh tekesef. If you buy kesef with nechoshet, so again, the kesef is going to be viewed the same. It's going to be that it's viewed that the kesef is buying the nechoshet, okay? And hakesef eino koneh tanechoshet. So therefore, when you give the money, the kesef, right, the silver, you're not going to acquire the nechoshet because again, the silver is viewed as coins. So according to this, the silver is viewed as coins, is basically as a matbea, both as it relates to gold and as it relates to nechoshet. Ma'ot ha'ra'ot konot atayafot, v'hayafot einan konot atayafot. Bad coins, okay, now we're going to have a machlok at Rashi Tosfot, what are bad coins? Bad coins, let's first explain the Mishnah and then we'll see the two different opinions, are considered peirot. Why? Because they're bad coins. They can't be used as currency. Okay, that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, what are bad coins? They're one. So if we trade bad coins for good coins, it means that the person with the good coins is basically trying to buy these bad coins. And why he wants them, I don't know, but maybe a collector's item or something. According to Rashi, their coins should nifsilu yadei malchut, and then maybe you really would say the collector's items, right? They wanted to have these old coins. Tosfot says that doesn't make any sense. He has a few problems with it. He says then they should be considered peirot in an objective standard, not just as compared to ma'ot yafot, right? Notice this whole Mishnah is all this relative to that is considered. Then it should be considered, right? If they're nifsilu, well, then no matter what you buy them with, they're always going to be considered. It could be, you know, compared to anything, they're considered peirot, number one. Number two, what was the other problem? Forget his other issue. Anyway, he says, therefore, it's coins that are starting to rot. Okay, coins are starting to go bad. Remember, the coins had a whole image on them, and they could flatten out over time, and it wouldn't be valuable. So they're starting to go bad. So what does Tosfot say? Since some people will accept this as currency and other people won't, okay, therefore, compared to ma'ot yafot, they're going to be considered peirot. They're not going to be considered matbeot. Okay. Asimon koneh et hamatbea, and asimon is not an asimon like the old asimon in Israel, but what is it? It's a round coin that doesn't have an image on it yet. It hasn't yet been minted, basically. You know, it hasn't yet been put with a seal on. So that's koneh et hamatbea, because again, that's going to be considered peirot compared to a matbea. And a matbea, you know, koneh et asimon. And likewise, the reverse is not going to work. Mitaltelin konin et hamatbea. Okay, this is the real case we should have started with, right? That when you're trading metaltalin for matbea, so the metaltalin is what you're going to do the kinyan with. But matbea, you know, koneh et metaltalin. But if you pay money, right, then you don't acquire the metaltalin by actually paying the money, you can still be chazer. Zehaklal. Kol metaltalin, or maybe you don't say zehaklal. Kol metaltalin konim ze et ze. Okay, if we trade a shor for a chamor, you know, we do a flip. So either one person does a kinyan on one already. That's koneh both to each of them. Ketzad, here we're going to see. Mashach emenu peirot. Velo natan lo ma'ot. Okay, now we're going to talk. That's why I said the end of the Mishnah is definitely much more, gives all the explanations. If you're moshech the peirot, you do a kinyan, and he doesn't give him ma'ot yet, eno yechol lachzor bo, he can't change his mind. But natan lo ma'ot, if you give him money, ולא משך ממנו פירות, יכול לחזור בו. Right? You give him money, but you don't yet take the פירות, so you can change your mind. There's a machloket about whether both sides can change their mind, or maybe only one side, but we're not going to get into it right now. Aval amru, okay, now we have the big problem. According to this, what does it show? You can pay money for something, and then it's not an actual kinyan yet. So what does the Mishnah tell us? Aval amru, mi shepara me'anshei dor mabul u'midor aflaga, hu atili para mi she'eino me'bediburo. Now they say, but this is called the mishapara. Okay, if you ever hear that term. This means God, who basically punished Dor HaMabul and Dor HaFlaga, he is basically going to punish anyone who goes against his word. Okay, so if you basically give money for something and then you change your mind and say, I don't want to go through with this sale, or the other guy says, I got your money and I don't want to go through with this sale, so God is going to basically, you know, get you in the end. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol Sha'kesef Biyadeo, Oh, sorry. This is it. Right. I made a mistake. According to the Tanakhama, I knew there was something that I was trying to remember. According to the Tanakhama, either side can go bichozer bo. It's Rabbi Shimon who has a different opinion. And he says, Kol she'kesef biyado yado ala elyona. That only one side can bichozer bo. He's the one who says it. And he says, only the one who has the money can change his mind. But if you already paid me for it, you can't change your mind. If I got the money and I say, well, I don't want to go through with the sale, I can do that. But again, only if it's money that I got. If there was an actual kinyan that transpired with an object, then Rabbi Shimon wouldn't say that. But if you basically have the money in your hand, you can change your mind and say, but the other side can't. Okay, Gemara. Mane le Rabbi le Rabbi Shimon Berei. Rabbi says to Rabbi Shimon, his son, Hazahav konat kesef. He taught him the Mishnah like we learned it. Amar le. So Rabbi Shimon, his son, says to him, Rabbi, shanita lana b'yaldutecha, ha-kesef koneh ta-zahav. V'tachzor v'tishneh lana b'zignutecha, ha-zahav koneh ta-kesef? When you were younger, you said, ha-kesef koneh ta-zahav. Now you're telling me the opposite? I don't get it. So now they're going to say, b'yaldute ma'isavar u'b'zignute ma'isavar. Okay, what's the difference between what he thought and what he thought then and what he thinks now? B'yaldute savar, da'ava d'chashiv ha-vetiva. When he was younger, he thought that Zahav, because of its importance, okay, so now we're going to say, right, it's Chashuv, therefore it's a Madbea, because it's more valuable than Kesef, therefore we're going to assume that's the item he was buying with. But Kesef, which is not considered as valuable as gold, Have peri. There's a few different explanations about what it means more important. Is it more valuable? Is it that the change between unminted coins to minted coins is greater in Zahav than it is in Kesef? It's a bit of a debate about what exactly this difference is. But because of its importance, it's therefore going to be considered more of a currency than na. Biziknute, what did he think? Savar, kaspa decharif habitiva. Dava de lo charif have pere. In other words, first he thought, again, Sperber has a different explanation about how exactly to read this, but according to this explanation, first he thought that what's the issue? It's how important it is. And Zahav is more important than gold, right? It's higher up on the level of value. Because of that, that would mean that's the currency. Later he realized, no, it goes by what's more sold in the shuk. What goes? What do people use for spending? That's what you would call the currency. So because most people buy things with silver, therefore he changed his tone. Okay? So Sperber, again, I didn't read Sperber's thing. I don't know what his theory is. I'm guessing it's somewhat based on some sort of change in maybe it wasn't Harif earlier. Maybe Zahav was used and later Kesef was used. I don't know. Anyway, it pays to look into his articles about it, his books, see what his theory is. Okay. And therefore, because Dava de lo charif, it's pere, v'kane le pere letiva, right? And then the pere would be buying, acquired, that would be the kinyan, and not the matbeot. Amar Rav Ashi, ki yaldute mistabra. Now Rav Ashi says, it sounds like what he said in his yaldut makes more sense. Why? Midekatane hanechoshet koneh ta kesef. Notice in the Mishnah, it was a little strange, right? You would have thought that it was the opposite with the Nechoshet and the Kesef, right? Almost like it's going down levels. Zahav is to Kesef, and Kesef is to Nechoshet. So the fact that In the reading of the Mishnah, right, look at our chart. We have Kesef is always considered the Matbea, right, both compared to Zahav and compared to Nechoshet. Now, if you switch around Rebbe, right, the first line there, you're going to have Zahav is to Kesef as Kesef is to Nechoshet, right? So now, he's going to say, it makes more sense to say it like that. Why? So, if you're going to say, again, this is one of those cases where they're going to explain what makes sense, and only once they explain what doesn't make sense, you're going to realize what makes sense. It's almost because it doesn't make sense the other way, therefore it's going to make sense this way. So we're not going to explain the first part too well, because we'll understand it better when we read the second part. So it makes more sense to say, kaspa lagabe dava pere, have, right? Kesep, as relates to Zahav, is going to be the pere. And therefore, hainu dekatane hanachosha koneata kesef. And therefore, it's saying that when it's compared to Zahav, it's going to be the pere. When it's compared to nechoshet, it's going to be the matbea. Da'af agav, delagabe dava pere, have, right? So this is what I just said. Even though it's going to be compared to Zahav, it's going to be payrot, legabe nechoshet tiva have, right? It's going to be the currency when it comes to buying nechoshet. Ela iamar kaspa legabe dava tiva have, but if you're going to say the way our Mishnah read it, the kesef is tiva, both compared to Zahav and compared to nechoshet, hash legabe dava dechashiv mine amar tiva have, if when it comes to some currency that's more important than it, we're saying it's a chidush, that wow, even compared to Zahav, which is more valuable, we're going to view it as if Kesef buys, Kesef is the matbea for the Zahav. So, legabe nechoshet, di'iu chashiv, di'iu charif, when it compares to nechoshet, where it's got two things better than the nechoshet. Number one, it's more important, it's more valuable. Number two, it's the currency that's used in the shuk all the time. So Mibaya, you're going to need to tell us. In other words, once it says Hakesef Eino Koneat HaZahav, so obviously we're going to say Hakesef Eino Koneat HaNechoshet, because Zahav is only Chashuv, but Kesef is both Chashuv and Tiva, right? So when it one ups, right? So let's do it like this. If Kesef is Harif, that's going to make it greater, right? Greater than, meaning it's a currency, okay? It's used. Because it's harif, it's going to win out something that's chashuv. So then, if you have harif and chashuv versus something that's less harif and less chashuv, obviously it's going to be considered the currency. So now they're going to have to say, no. We don't have to say that, because it's tzirich. Salka data chamine, hane prite ba'atra desagya, inu harif etfe mikaspa. That those prutot in a place where people use nechoshet, okay, there it's actually more harif than kesef, and therefore emativa have. That since there are places where nechoshet is used more than kesef, even though it's not everywhere, you might have thought that if you're having some transaction here, that we're going to call it the matbea, and therefore kamash malan, and therefore it comes to teach us that kevan deika duchta delo sagebe pere have. That since there are places where no one will use nechoshet at all, therefore, kesef is always going to be considered the currency compared to nechoshet. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah. So therefore, it doesn't prove anything. Okay? But I just want to show you, because we're going to see the Malach now. So just to review, we have Rebbe Kamaita, Rebbe Batraita, the first Rebbe and the second Rebbe. Right? The second Rebbe appears in our Mishnah. We had an attempt to prove that the first reading of Rebbe seems to make more sense. Now we disproved it. Now we're going to have another support of the first Rebbe. Va'af Rabbi Chiya Savar Dahava Tivahavi. Even Rabbi Chiya held that Zahav is a matbea. How do we know this? De Rav Ozif Dinari mi Barte de Rabbi Chiya. Rav borrowed money from the daughter of Rabbi Chiya. Lesof Iyakir Dinare. Over time, what happened? The Dinare, these are Dinare Zahav. Okay, the Dinarim of Zahav went up in value. And now, in other words, what happened? There was inflation. And now, one Dinar of Zahav is worth more than it was worth before. Okay, let's say we're going to see this amount soon. Okay, one dinar of Zahav is, we've seen this before, is 25 dinarim of kesef. Okay, 25 silver coins. So now what happened was, let's say at the time of the loan it was 25. Now it's worth 30 silver coins. Okay, so now what's the obvious problem? When he goes to return a dinar of Zahav, is there a rebate problem? Okay, because He's now returning something with a higher value. Ata l'kamed Rabbi Chiya. Amar le zil shlim la tavin utkilin. Now you have to ignore the fact that this is his daughter, and he obviously wanted his daughter to get her money back, right? But let's assume that he wasn't, you know, he's Rabbi Chiya, he's not going to do that. But what does he say? Give her good coins and shlemim. Tkilim is shlemim, or, you know, good perfect coins. Okay? So, meaning, just give her a gold coin back and it's fine. So now, what does this prove? Again, we want to prove that Zahav is considered a madbea. Iyamar bishlamadava tivahave shapir. If it's a currency, so there's inflation, but $1 is $1, one shekel is one shekel, whether one day the shekel is worth more and one day the shekel is worth less, right? This happens every day, it changes value, but one shekel is one shekel. Ela iyamar perehave, if you view this as a commodity, havele se'a b'se'a v'asur. If you remember, we learned this, that you can't lend a se'a of wheat for a se'ah of wheat, meaning you can't lend someone, say, I'll lend you a se'ah of wheat and you'll return me a se'ah of wheat. Why not? Because it's not going to be worth the same thing when you return it. And because of that, it's a rebate problem. Okay? So therefore, if we view gold as a commodity, then he wouldn't have been able to return the gold to the daughter. Because the gold, if it's like, it's like se'ah b'se'ah, basically. Okay? Everybody follows? It's basically a commodity which fluctuated in value, and that can't be. So now what do they answer? No, again, they answer that doesn't prove anything, because why? Because se'ah b'se'ah is mutar. I'll already tell you before we read this inside. Se'ah b'se'ah is mutar in a particular way. When is it allowed? Let's say I need wheat right now. I have wheat in my house, but I'm not in my house. Or I can't find the keys, or my son has it, or something like that. I say, can I borrow wheat now? And I have wheat in my house that I'm going to give you later. That exact wheat. In that case, we don't care if the wheat fluctuates in price, because at that point, I'm promising you the wheat that was there, that's sitting in my house. So even at this moment, they're worth the exact same thing, because it's based on the shuk value. So therefore, I'm saying, I'm going to give you that wheat in my house. So even if I give it back to you in 3 days and it's worth a different amount, I already designated that wheat to you in my house. So it's okay. In that way, you can do that kind of a loan. So therefore, they're going to say, this case must have been like that. The Rav dinare havele, he had dinarim in his house. The kevan de havele dinare na se ke omer lo, as if he said to her, because he had dinarim in his house, it was as if he said to her, helveni ad shevo b'ni o ad shem samavtech. It's as if he said, lend me until I find my son, who has my money, or until I find the key. Okay, or until my son comes, not if I find my son. So we had two attempts to prove Zahav is a currency, and we rejected them. Amar Rava, Hai Tana Savar Dava Tivahavi. Now he's going to show that there's a Tana who holds that Zahav is Kesef. I'm sorry, Zahav is a currency. Okay? I have to be careful, right? It is Kesef, but, you know, I don't want to say that because that's going to confuse.
Is that what the etymology of the modern Hebrew day word is?
From Kesef, because here they put Kesef as the currency, right? It's a good question. Could be. Definitely a possibility. Okay, Ditanya. Okay, here we get into amounts. Okay, I'm hoping by the time we finish this perek and we get all the different currencies and they're clear in our heads. Okay, in the beginning it'll be a little new. We've come across this before, but okay. Pruta shamru echa mishmona b'isara italki. A pruta, when they talk about a pruta, right, we talk about it all the time, a shava pruta. Okay, what is that amount? It's 1/8 of an isara italki. Okay, I put this all on your sheets. Which means, basically, in other words, I wrote them in both ways, each of these terms. 8 prutot of nechoshet is equal to an isar ha'italki, right? Because that's just another way of saying the same thing. Okay, so now what does it mean? L'may nafkamina l'kidushei isha. What does this mean? What the Gemara tried to set up here with these amounts was a way to say, even if prices fluctuate, okay, even if they fluctuate, when we talk about a shavah pruta in halacha, it has to always be, even if now 10, let's say, okay, right now it's 8 prutot of nechoshet is equal to an isar etzelki, according to this braita. If things change and 10 prutot of nechoshet are equal to, right, the pruta goes down in value, okay, l'may nafkamina l'kidushei isha. If you go to marry a woman, betroth a woman, or a man goes to betroth a woman, not one of you, a man goes to betroth a woman, he can't use one of those prutot of nechoshet now, because those are now worth less than a pruta. In other words, when we talk about a pruta lahalacha, it's 1/8 of an isari yitzalki. So if now it's 1/10 of an isari yitzalki, that's not going to be, you can't marry a woman with that pruta. Okay, this is saying, this is an absolute value that even though prices will fluctuate, you can never go less than this value when it comes to halachic things like needing a shavah pruta l'kiddushesha. Isar, okay, we haven't yet gotten to how this proves our point. So hold on. Isar, echad me'esrim v'arba b'dinar shal kesef. In Isar, now this, right, so we said that's how it compares to Nechoshet to an Isar. Now in Isar is 1/24 of a dinar of kesef. L'maynaf kamina, l'mekach u'memkar. What's the relevance here? Let's say I go to trade an Isar for dinar. Okay, I go trade Isarim for dinarim. Okay, so 24 isarim make up a dinar of kesef. Let's say you give me, let's say I give you 28 isarim for a dinar, okay, or something. So we have this halacha of ona'a. We're going to get into this a lot in the next little while, between this parak and the next parak about rebeat. We're going to get into all the sorts of halachot of rebeat and ona'a and all sorts of things. So ona'a is 1/6. You can't do a transaction for more than 1/6 or less. You can't cheat someone out of, you know, 1/6 the amount. So therefore, go out of the range more than 1/6 of this relationship, 24 yisarim to 1 dinar of kesef. Dinar shel kesef, here's our important part. A dinar of kesef is a cham esrim v'chamisha b'dinar shel zahav. In other words, 25 dinarim of kesef is 1 dinar shel zahav. Okay, this is very important because, okay, l'may nafkamina l'pidyon haben. First of all the values are given in the Torah, right? Like a kesef. So there's chamishim kesef, right? That's what we get. Remember, we've seen this before. The chamishim kesef is 200 zuz. Why 200 zuz? 200 zuz is 200 dinarim. Dinarim of zuzim and dinarim of kesef are the same. Okay, so the 200 zuz from the ketubah and from the, it's the motzi shemra, I think it's is 50. So the 50 kesef, or maybe the ones, I forget where it comes up, maybe all of them are 50. It's the 50, which is basically, right, is going to be, it's chamishim kesef. How does this work out? Wait, why am I confused now? Shim v'chamisha, v'dinar shel kesef. Dinar shel zahav, does that make sense? No, I forget what it says there and how they get to that from here. Okay, but anyway, it's 120. It's 25 dinarim of kesef is a dinar of zahav. I forget the exact correlation there. Okay, so anyway, l'manaf kinumim l'pidyon aben. What about a pidyon aben? You need 5 sla'im of kesef. 5 sla'im of kesef. Okay, so now, according to this, right, so it's 5 kesef, and then that's going to be, right, 1 second, I forgot all the how this works. Right, it's going to be, 1 second. That's what it is. It's, right, there's more to it than that. Okay, so now, a chameshet shkalim b'shekel ha-kodesh, it says. The shekel is a selah. I think this is the part I'm missing, right? A selah, that's what it is. A selah is 25 dinarim of, 1 second. Ashura pidyonu chamesha sla'im, which is 20 dinarim of kesef. Because a shekel is a selah, right, that was what I was missing. A selah, a shekel is a selah, and a selah is 4 dinarim of kesef. That's what it was. Okay. A selah is 4 dinarim. Okay, that's where I knew I was missing one important point. A selah is 4 dinarim. So if you need, if it's 50 sla'im, it's going to be 50 times 4 is 200 dinarim. You follow? That's what it was. It wasn't the connection to the 25 of the dinarim is a half. That's what it is. A selah is 4 dinarim. So when it comes to the ketubah, right, it's 50 sla'im, which is times 4, which is 200 dinarim. Okay? So now, when it comes to pidyon aben, 4 dinarim is how many, is 5 sla'im is going to be 20 dinarim. Okay? Which means, how does that compare to a dinar of kesef? It's going to be 4/5 of a dinar of kesef. Of a, not a dinar, right, sorry. 4/5 of a dinar of zahav. Because 1 dinar of zahav is 25, So 4/5 of 25 is going to be 20. So it's telling you that the value that he has to give to the Kohen is 4/5 of a dinar of Zahav. Okay, so now, how does this relate to our issue? So, Iyamart, one second. Iyamart bishlamati vahava mishartana b'midi dekits. If you're going to say, what are they saying here? In all these statements, they were giving the second line. The second thing that we were saying is the item that doesn't fluctuate. So if you say that Zahav is the Matbea, then the Tana was basically saying this is the currency that stays the same. Ela Iamar Perahave, Mishar Tana Bemidi Daoki Vizil. If it's payroll, then it fluctuates in price. He's not going to set the amount for the Slaim, right? Because what will happen then? Zimnin Demahaja Lekana, Vizinin Demosifle. In other words, then the Kohen will have to adjust based on the changing value of the dinar of Zahav, and that won't work. Okay? And therefore, Elish Mamina Tivahave. Okay? And therefore, we're going to assume from here that Zahav is a Matbea, because that's the one given as the item that doesn't fluctuate, but it always stays stable. Okay.